Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 74 and episode 75 of Zion's Finest. This is going to be a two-parter because we ran a teensy bit long. What happened is I got Ryan Janway of the Tauntaun Rider fame, of the North Carolina Swarm fame, apparently now. I got on the podcast to talk about tournament prep, and then he gives a recap of Nationals. It's awesome. I love Ryan. He is actually one of the people who inspired me to start the podcast. He's just so approachable, but he's also really smart. He's good at the game. He makes it accessible to new people, but obviously he's incredibly good. So it just, there is an immense amount of profit in just talking with him and listening to him. So I was really glad to get him on the podcast. And this is going to be an episode that everyone's going to enjoy. Like I said, it went a little bit long. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to break it up. Episode 74 is going to be the first half. Episode 75 will be the second half. You'll enjoy both segments tremendously. Ryan is such a cool guy. News, no news. Except for Lothal, the Lothal Wastes map, it's officially out. We don't know where it is in terms of its occupation of physical space, but FFG has announced that it is available for purchase at local stores, so we're just going to have to check things out. I'm going to take the twins on a game store run tomorrow night, and we'll see if we can find it. But you should either be able to get it from your local game store, or you definitely should be able to order online from like Miniature Market, Cool Stuff Inc. One of the Slack members, who I think it was on Miniature Market, it might have been on Cool Stuff. His just showed up, so I mean they've been getting it out pretty quickly. And then the other bit of news is, again, we're encouraging everybody to join us on the Slack channel so that you can get ready for Wave 3 of our Vassal Tournament. Just send an email to zionsfinestia@gmail.com. If you know about a regional, please let me know on zionsfinestia@gmail.com, or you can message me on the Slack. Any way you can get in contact with me. What I need is just information regarding the venue, the date, and your contact information, because what I'm going to do is if someone is in North Carolina and they are like, hey, I want to go to a regional, I'm going to say, okay, Ryan Janway has told me that this store in Cary, North Carolina is having a store championship. Contact him. He'll give you all the details. I mean, I'm going to try and get all that on the OP doc anyway, but that's what's going to be going on. Okay, besides that, there's no news. Let's just turn it over to Ryan and let's hear what he has to say. Hello and welcome to episode 74 of Zion's Finest. This is Kenny Brown and I am joined by my brother, Ryan Janway.
Hello, everybody.
Ryan is back. Those of us who know anything about Imperial Assault have long heard the name of Ryan Janway. He's going to be giving an awesome discussion today. He's going to talk a little bit about Nationals. Ryan was the infamous, I want to say infamous, we'll say very famous for good and ill, pilot of the Riot Swarm, which it's going to be really cool to pick his brain about that. But before we do, Ryan, maybe do you want to just give, for our new listeners, a reintroduction into who you are, how long you've been playing Imperial Assault, just like your general background?
Yeah, sure. And again, Kenny, you're too kind. Thanks for the intro there. My name is Ryan Janway. I've been playing Imperial Assault in competitive skirmish for a little over 2 years now, I guess. Played the campaign a bunch to start with and then got into skirmish about 2 years ago. I currently live in North Carolina, so have not made the trip out to Worlds yet, but my big event of the year is the U.S. Nationals, which is what I'm going to talk a little bit about today.
Are you going to be coming out to Worlds this year, Ryan?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes!
This is the time.
This is it. This is it. Okay, perfect.
Got to do it.
Okay, well, before we get into your tournament report. So Ryan, this episode is going to be really, really awesome. It's going to be awesome for everybody. I mean, just because Ryan's like such a good player. It's also going to be really awesome for people who are getting serious about playing skirmish in this. If this is like their first regional season, regionals is kind of, I think, the real time when people who are new to the game start cutting their teeth in terms of, you know, they're going to be playing against other really, really good players who want to do well. And so this is going to be an awesome episode for people who are looking for that. And we've got a bunch of new players on the Slack and it's going to be awesome for them. But maybe before we do, Ryan, do you want to just like, let's talk about Nationals in the sense of like tournament prep, your list, all of those things?
Yeah, sure. So my experience with U.S. Nationals, I went in 2017 for the first time. It was my first big tournament event like this. Really didn't know entirely what I was walking into, but I had a fantastic time there. Really good experience. Definitely wanted to come back the following year. And I knew, you know, there's a really high level of competition there, some really great players that show up at this event. So I have a couple of friends in my play group, and there was about three of us that were going to be going to Nationals this year. And we all, you know, playing the game regularly, really wanted to make sure we're going to do well at this big tournament. So, starting, I guess, late summer of this year, we really kind of started focusing on preparing for the U.S. Nationals tournament, which is held at the Nova Open, big wargaming convention in the Washington, D.C. area. And it happens every year over the Labor Day weekend. So, so started sort of focusing on that with our play testing and our practicing. This kind of a tournament, we knew it was going to be, day one was going to be six rounds. So you're going to play on each mission in rotation.
Yep.
Based on what I experienced last year, there was about 45 players or so that showed up. So day one, you're going to go and play through six rounds, and then there's a cut. This year, it was a cut to the top eight. And so they would do a cut at the end of the first day. The top eight were coming back to play on Sunday. So those are some of the things you had to kind of think about. Like, need to have an idea and a plan for each of the missions, because you're gonna be on every single one. You're not gonna in some of the smaller tournaments, you may only play three missions, four missions, right? Yep. And in those situations, you might hope for you might hope to avoid a certain mission that isn't favorable for your list, or hope that you land on one that's really good for what you're running. But at a big tournament like this, similar to Worlds, you got to play it all, right? So you need to be ready for that.
There's also something to be said for the fact, and I mean, you might be planning on talking about this, but Nova, the East Coast is there. The density of good players there is pretty incredible, right? Like,
absolutely.
You, Brett Kelly, Lucas Davidson, right. James Hedgepeth, Paul Heaver, like all these guys who are really, really good all live on the East Coast.
Really good at the game, right? So, yep. And you want to go to a tournament like this. You want to have fun, but you also, for someone like me, I also want to do well. You know, I want to come away feeling like I made a good showing. So, in preparation for this tournament coming up, I've been playing Imperials since before Heart of the Empire came out. So I took Imperials to U.S. Nationals in 2017. Mm. That's kind of my favorite faction. I knew that's what I wanted to play. You know, this year, everybody has seen the rise of Unshakable Vader.
Yep.
Right. And I think by late summer of this year, it really had kind of shaken out that I don't know if I want to say the best, but certainly one of the best versions of that list was Vader with the double elite jet troopers, the cross-trained regular riots for a little spy card action, and then a couple of officers. You know, that seemed to be the Vader list that was doing
all the work.
And consistently doing well, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
So that one was obviously very prevalent. You knew that was a list you could expect to see at this tournament. As far as other lists, you know, so we're thinking about the missions that you have to face, and then also the other lists that, you know, that your opponent's going to be running. So knew there was going to be a lot of Unshakable Vader. Knew that Han Rangers is definitely, you know, very popular.
Absolutely.
Something you got to plan for.
Because this is like this is going to be the last tournament before LaFalle drops.
Right, and everyone is, and Lethal was literally dropping like a week before the tournament, but with FFG's tournament policy, the wave wasn't legal by about 48 hours. Yeah, so everyone had seen what was coming, and so like you're saying, everybody knew about Doubt, knew that, you know, this was going to have an impact on the game, so it was kind of the last... I don't know if I want to say the last hurrah, but certainly people were trying to run things that they weren't sure about being able to run in the future.
Yeah, great point.
So you got Han Rangers is a big threat. You've got IG, of course.
Yep.
And then, you know, you guys have talked about it in several episodes. There's also been this rise of the scum point manipulation lists, yep. You know?
Jabba making and his comeback.
Absolutely, which I think is really interesting, really kind of a cool thing to see that happen. It's been a while since Jabba has been out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting to see those things develop. So these are all kind of the archetypes that myself and the guys I play with were preparing for. And so then in that sense, you have to start trying to narrow down, like, what is the list that I want to bring to a tournament like this? Like I said, I play Imperials mostly, a lot of Vader. And in the playtesting that we had, you know, leading up to the Nationals, I was finding with the rise of that scum point manipulation list and with the rise of Vader, Vader became, you know, the threshold and still
yep.
is.
Like, yep, absolutely.
You're going to see him. You have to have a plan for how to deal with him. Hunters have great tools to be able to do that, to eliminate him. So this was, you know, as we were playing our games, this is what I was finding more and more was that my opponents were very prepared at dealing with Vader, which is
yes.
how it should be, right? If Vader's everywhere, you got to practice against him. You got to know what to do. One of the games that really left an impression on me in our playtesting was with one of my friends named Nathan, who was doing a version of like a Jawa swarm with the point manipulation stuff going on. So he had Jabba, no IG, I think, but it was at least two elite Jawas, things like Onar, Greedo, taking advantage of the way that the Jawas can get victory points through their surge ability,
yep.
Things like pickpocket, in addition to, you know, the price on their heads and the celebration. So one of our games, he managed to eliminate my Vader with the works. He had played the price on their heads. He
yes.
had got celebration off. He got the bonus point from Jabba. You know, so this ends up, I think, being a 22-point Vader kill.
Yep.
To give him fair credit, he accomplished this. The killing blow was done by Salacious Crumb.
Oh my God.
He was running. He was running. Indentured Servant, right? And most people don't think about that card, but he's got an ability for free damage on there, unmitigated damage. And
yep.
So that game left a big impression on me. Seeing the way that Vader could be removed like that for so many points and knowing that so many people are prepared to deal with him. You know what I mean? It really started kind of turning my thoughts about what I wanted to run. I didn't like the idea of walking into the room with something that everyone else had already kind of figured out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a great point for especially in terms of like big tournament preparation.
Right. Right. Now, some people take those meta lists and they are able to perfect them and come in with, you know, maximum efficiency on those lists. And that obviously that works as well.
Yep.
For me, I was looking for something with more of a surprise factor to it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
As we're doing our playtesting, we had seen mentions. I can't take 100% claim for this Riot Swarm idea. We had seen mentions of it online, right? Through the Slack, through some of the postings on forums and stuff. My impression was that it was always kind of a joke.
Yeah.
You know,
I thought the same thing.
It was funny. It looked ridiculous. And you know, started talking about it with the guys I play with, made a few jokes here and there, and then we kind of started thinking, like, maybe there's something to this thing. Maybe this has actually got some legs, you know?
Yeah.
So we kind of started brainstorming. I started testing it out on Vassal a little bit just to kind of see how it played. And then we started putting it out on the table and trying it at our weekly meetups as well. And we were finding that, like, wow, this has got an interesting element to it. Like, it is just a swarm of figures, and they are pretty, it is pretty hard to deal with.
Yeah.
So some of the things that we started figuring out about this list, where so many things are geared towards alpha strikes and spike damage and trying to land these big blows on, like, the queen piece figures, right?
Yep, absolutely.
When you have a bunch of very cheap, low value figures, it becomes difficult to decide what to prioritize. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
And then a lot of times, your opponent ends up having to overspend, to get a cheap kill. You know, if they're not reaching, the damage they need exactly, then sometimes, they have to throw in those extra cards, those extra abilities, just to get this kind of cheap kill. It's not really worth a lot with the,
yeah, that's such a feels bad, man, right? To have to, you know, expend cards to kill a 7 health figure to get 3 points.
Yes,
right.
So I want to talk about the stats just briefly on the Riot Troopers. Most people are familiar with these guys, but and I guess I'll start talking about the list that I was working with. So what started to form was this Riot Swarm list, which was compromised of 2 elite Riot Troopers. Those guys have 7 health. They have roll a black die for defense. They're melee figures, 4 speed. They cost 7 points to bring, and they're each figure's worth 3 points when they're defeated. Their attack pool is a red and blue dice. They have a built-in reroll, which is really great.
Incredible.
They have 2 different surges for damage. One surge is for 2 damage. The other surge is for 1 damage, which is it's a fantastic surge pool because you can never over-surge with these guys.
Yep.
Your symbols are all damage, which is great. And then what I think is one of the most interesting things about them, the elites have built-in weaken. So as long as they're doing 1 damage, they're putting weaken out.
So good.
Right. And then they also have the ability that says, after an attack resolves, if you dealt at least 1 damage, then the target suffers 1 strain. And that is actually like a really big deal. So that's the elite. You get 2 copies of those guys. You take 4 copies of the regular Riot Trooper, which is very similar, just 5 health instead of 7. They don't have the reroll. They have 2 separate surges for 1 damage each. They don't have the weaken to dish out, but they still have the strain.
Yeah.
Comes. So the math that I kind of was basing everything around on these guys, when you're just looking at a regular Riot Trooper attack, which is red, blue dice, 2 different surges for 1 damage, you basically have a 70% chance to do 2 damage against a black dice or a white dice.
Okay.
You have about a 50% chance to do 3 damage to a black or white dice. The interesting thing there is that you're still getting that 1 strain after that.
And the weekend.
And the elites are doing the weekend.
Yep.
Right. So
on the white die, it's going to pile on, right? Because you're going to hit them once, they take damage, now they're weakened.
Yes.
So now all of your, like, they can't stop your surges now.
Exactly. And so in my experience playing this list, the goal was always just to get you're okay with just doing one or two damage with these guys, as long as you're getting to add that point of strain in there as well. Because that really starts to stack up, and most lists are not prepared for having to make that many strain decisions, right? Having to choose that many times about, am I taking a damage or am I going to discard a card here? So even though it's all melee figures and they're kind of slow and they only roll two dice, the offense, while it was low, was very consistent and really stacked up over time. And that was something I really liked. The other thing I liked about that strain is that I felt like it kind of gave you some level of card control over your opponent.
Yeah.
Because you're gaining information as they decide to take the strain as damage or burn the card. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because if they take it as damage, right? Like if I've got Han and I don't have On the Lamb in my hand, right? I'm going to be really reluctant to like burn a whole lot of strain as cards, which tells you something, right? You're like, okay, he doesn't have On the Lamb in hand. Now let's go beat him down.
Yeah, exactly. And it's obviously not the same as having a spy playing spy cards, but it's still it's still valuable information, you know?
Absolutely.
So the other thing that I've found about this list is that I could really just focus, make objective points my primary focus with the list, and could win matches that way. I didn't necessarily have to prioritize kills. And I like that kind of play. That's one of my favorite things about the game, is being able to play to the objectives more than just a team deathmatch kind of game, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
At the same token, I quickly realized that there are certain figures that you're just never going to be able to kill with 12 riot troopers.
Yeah.
Figures like Darth Vader is basically untouchable. Because the math just doesn't hold up. You're never going to get the damage into him that you need in order to get that kill. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's kind of okay. You just decide, I ignore him, avoid him as much as possible, and now Darth Vader has to try to get his points back by killing 2 and 3 point figures, because that's all I have. You know what I mean? Other figures that are kind of in that category are things that have an additional defense built in. So IG-88, black dice +1 block, and crazy speed. He's a figure that is, if he wants to run away, the riot troopers are going to have a hard time catching him, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Drakata, same way. Built-in block, black dice, Chewbacca, definitely the same way. So these are the kind of pieces that you just basically have to say, okay, stay away from them, avoid them, but I don't waste attacks on them because I'm never going to get anything out of it. There's occasions when you may want to throw an attack just to try to put weaken on one of these guys, and that can be meaningful. But other than that, figures like Han, though, that roll white dice, usually the rule is don't attack Han, right?
Yeah.
But with the riot swarm, I wouldn't say it's a strategy, but it's definitely a possibility. The red and blue dice going against Han, if he's not next to 3PO getting the extra defense bonus, you have a chance of putting some damage on him, you know?
Yeah.
In this list, I was playing command cards like Death Blow, which adds 2 damage against a ranged attacker. So if an elite riot trooper plays Death Blow on Han, if Han doesn't dodge, that's probably going to be 4-ish damage with weaken and a strain.
Yeah, and that weaken, once it gets on Han, man, that's a killer.
Right. So again, attacking Han's usually a bad idea, but if all Han has to shoot at are regular riot troopers, and you can pile them on him, you have a chance there. So So these are things that, you know, we're kind of figuring out and having to keep in our mind as like how this could work. Obviously, with this many figures, you have a great angle on objective control and area control on the map. So it was really, I mean, very quickly becoming obvious that like, okay, this list is awesome at missions that tell you to go stand on an objective and get points, right? Because I've got 12 riot troopers, 2 officers. I can send these guys anywhere I need them to be. And they're not exactly easy to kill. So the stand on an objective point missions, those were, I knew those were going to be good for this kind of a list. So as we were kind of going through this playtesting as well, my good friend Terry Floyd also went to Nationals. He was kind of having a hard time finding a list that he wanted to play. He typically runs Scum or Rebel Heroes, those kinds of lists. And, you know, I think he was really looking forward to having Lothal out, wasn't super excited about stuff in the current meta. So he decided to double down and do the Riot Swarm as well. And so this was an interesting approach, having two people in the same kind of play group really focusing on this list. And it really gave us a chance to get even more like data points from it and more play experiences, you know? So we would be playing against other guys in our area, and, you know, we could kind of compare notes. We could say, I tried this strategy out. This is what I found to work here. You know, these command cards are really working for me. So that's another just kind of strategy as people might prepare for these kind of tournament events. Usually you want your play group to be diverse in their list so you can practice against as many different things as possible. But there is something interesting to, you know, two people kind of running the same list and really sort of honing in on that. So I think it definitely helped us sort of perfect it. And we got to, you know, got to label the list the Carolina Swarm as a result, because come two guys from North Carolina with the combined total of 24 riot troopers. So,
That's awesome. I totally agree. That is an interesting point. I feel like our play group in Utah is like incredibly diverse. Like no one really runs the same thing.
Yeah.
And so but now that I think about that, I mean, and this is actually a good example. I would love it if someone else was running the box, because you could kind of see like two minds working on this list just gives you a lot of information, right? Sure. As opposed to just like one person. So if like you're the only one who's running this Carolina Swarm, you're like, well, I don't find that my Vader matchup is very bad, right? Like it's like, well, like what do I tell from that? That I was wrong in my like, you know, my like prior like theory crafting, you know, like it's just really tough to extrapolate any lessons from that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's an interesting thought, you know, if people want to use that as they're preparing for this regional season coming up, if you can find a list that you and your buddy want to run, that's something to consider. Yeah. So now kind of moving into the specifics of the missions that we're going to be playing on at this tournament. You know, I think this is an important part of preparation, is like being very familiar with exactly how each of the missions work, knowing how you're going to get your points on each of those missions, right? Knowing how you want the game to go. What does a victory look like for the list that you're bringing, right, on this particular mission? These are all things to think about.
How are you counting to 40 in like every mission, right? Like what's my general plan, and also in terms of general matchups, right?
Exactly.
Like if I'm playing against Vader and I'm playing on Mos Eisley, how am I going to count to 40?
Absolutely.
Right? Because I'm not going to kill Vader, right? So like how am I going to do that?
Yep. And especially when preparing for tournament season or a big event like this, I like to hop on Vassal and just sometimes practice like deployments, right? So I'll pick the different missions and just kind of sit there and play around with like, what's my optimal deployment from each side of the map, depending on what the mission is. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I'll kind of practice deployment and then usually practice like, what do my round one moves look like? You know, usually things haven't gotten too crazy. You have a pretty good amount of control over how things are going in the first round. And I think that's important in having like good opening moves, you know?
I completely agree.
Yeah. So it's really started paying attention to these six missions in rotation and thinking about how my list would play on each of these. And I'll just kind of briefly go through my thoughts on the three different maps. Starting with the oldest map in rotation, the Mos Eisley back alleys. So something I noticed when I was looking at the full scope of all six missions that are in rotation, right? Just to kind of summarize them, there are three of the six missions basically tell you stand on a control point and get two victory points at the end of the round.
Yep.
There's one of those missions on each of the three maps. You have one mission on Mos Eisley is a pick up and deliver crates for four victory points mission. And then you have sort of the oddballs. You have the Rogue AI mission on Tarkin. You have the Courier Droids mission on Uscrew. I will share some more thoughts on those in a moment. But starting with Mos Eisley, the A mission called Stashed Away is the one that gives you two victory points for standing on the control point. That's one where like my list is kind of built for that sort of thing, right? Early on, yep. I can spread the guys out, get to as many of those control points as possible, really put pressure on my opponent to decide, okay, am I going to let him have all these objective points, or am I going to try to remove his figures that are sitting on control points? All the while, there's enough of them that not only do I have guys on the objective points, I also have sort of the attackers moving to start beating on my opponent's figures, right? Right.
Yeah, thumping. Absolutely.
So that creates a really difficult choice, right? Do you shoot at the horde coming in, or do you shoot at the guys sitting off to the side racking up points? No easy choice there. You know what I mean?
Nope.
So that mission, pretty straightforward. Spread the guys out, you're gonna get those points. As your figures start taking damage, my strategy there would be to rotate the damaged guys to the back, find a somewhat safe objective point for them to sit on. And then usually it would put my opponent in the position where maybe they took a shot and got some damage on a regular riot trooper, but didn't finish him. Now that riot trooper has retreated to the back line and is still sitting on an objective point back there. And so if they want to get that kill, a lot of times they'd have to overextend and kind of put themselves in a bad position just to finish off a 2-point figure, you know?
Yeah. What a feels bad. So, that is just like, ugh.
So that sort of thing worked well. That was a general idea on Mos Eisley, on the Stashed Away. On the other mission, the B mission, Concealed Treasures, this is the one where there are 8 crates spread out around the map. You can pick the crates up and bring them to either deployment zone. There's a designated space where you can turn the crate in for 4 victory points. So this is one where I really practiced that opening deployment, those opening moves. And I had figured out a way where by the end of round one, like I said, there's 8 total crates on the map, I could have 4 of those in my possession. I could have 4,
oh, wow,
4 of the crates picked up by the end of round one. And, you know, the only thing my opponent could do is to try to shoot these guys that are grabbing them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So, again, this mission just kind of plays to the strong suits of the list. Round one, I have 16 points that I could potentially score if my opponent doesn't do something about it. You know what I mean?
Oh my God.
So that puts another, you know, that puts that same pressure where it says, okay, if you don't, if the opponent doesn't act quickly, these guys could all just run back to the deployment zone, rack those points up, and now
you've got a 16-point advantage.
Right. And he's playing catch up, you know?
Yep.
So that one just gave, yeah, a great pressure. And I have the actions with figures like this to spend on picking those crates up, you know? The other thing I like about that mission is that if I need to be more offensive, riot troopers can grab those crates and then score them in the opponent's deployment zone. If I'm need to just put everybody full offense, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh,
they can grab the crate, keep moving and attacking until you make it over there. So that I knew that mission was going to be another pretty good one for me. Looking at the Uskru Entertainment District. So this is maybe the most interesting one for the list, the priority message. This is a courier droid mission. Yeah. I do, and it's obvious if you know this mission, that a list like a Riot Swarm is at a pretty significant disadvantage here. It's a large map. It's got fairly protected spaces for ranged figures to be able to take shots as you're trying to approach. And the objective points just play very differently than any other mission. At the end of the round, you're putting a courier droid down in your deployment zone. You're moving it out six spaces. You won't score a courier droid until round three. And when you do, they're worth 6 points.
Yeah.
So generally, what I've seen is people tend to more or less ignore the courier droids and just say, we're making this a kill fest, and we're both going to trade courier droid points, right?
Yep.
So I knew that this one was going to be a real challenge for me because the opponent would be able to take pot shots at my guys as I'm coming in. It would take me probably until round three, realistically, before I could start making a lot of attacks with a riot swarm. Because round one, I'm just kind of moving out into the middle. Round two, probably having to like double move a lot of the guys again just to get into position for attacking. Mm-hmm. And then the attacks aren't coming until round three. And all that time, you know, I'm going to be taking damage on my figures. So I started sort of brainstorming, like, what could I do to make this mission work for me? How could I try something different here? And I started thinking about, okay, playing the objectives. How would you play the objectives here? Kill the courier droids. That's what I kind of started toying around with. So I was like, okay, most people don't worry about the courier droids too much. They tend to just throw them out there. Most people don't bother attacking them, right? They have they have six health and they roll a black dice. So they're not exactly easy.
Yeah, it's tough to one-shot them.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of times you wouldn't want to use an attack that could one-shot that courier droid. You'd want to use it on an actual figure, you know?
Great point.
So I started kind of developing this strategy on this mission of thinking, okay, I know how people tend to move the courier droids, right? You drop that courier droid in your deployment zone, and at the end of round one, most people tend to move it to the open lane, the lane where they don't have a door blocking their access, right? Tend to move it that way. Round two, he's moving up near the opponent's door line. And then round three, the droid is moving into the opponent's deployment zone to score for 6 victory points. So I started kind of thinking about the math and wondering, okay, how many attacks do I need to remove a courier droid? Like I said earlier, 70% chance to get 2 damage into a black dice with a regular riot attack. So I was thinking, okay, if I can keep about 3 attacks ready to throw at this courier droid, I should have a pretty good chance of getting it. And in my head, I was trying to figure this out as about 3.5 attacks. So for me, that was something like one elite riot trooper and two regular riot troopers. I was considering that about 3.5 attacks, which should be enough to remove a courier droid, to get 6 damage into it.
Okay.
So the way I would position my figures, I would tend to move about 2/3 of my riot swarm out into the open lane on round one, like you would expect. It's the only open space. Most of the guys are just flooding out that way. And then I would hold back about 1/3. Usually it was about 3 riots and 1 officer. And I would position those guys near my terminal, somewhere close in between the 2 doors that you start with on your side, whichever side you're on, top or bottom there.
Okay.
And so, you know, we'd have these round one maneuvers. Round two, depending on how doors opened, either in round two or potentially round three, I would try to position these riot troopers where I could get attacks on the opponent's courier droid and remove him in these 3 or 3.5 attacks, right? I found this to be working for me. I found that, okay, I'm removing his courier droid. He can't remove my courier droid because it's sitting behind a wall of riot troopers. So now this becomes, it doesn't kick in until round three, but now this becomes a 6-point objective, objective point advantage that I'm getting. If we go to round four and I can get 2 droids, it's now 12 points. So then the math becomes, you know, can the opponent kill my figures enough to make up for that deficit? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And all the while,
like, the riot swarm is pressing.
Right. The riot swarm is pressing there. And definitely some of the riots are getting knocked down. But I found this to be my best shot on this mission. So this became my game plan. You know, anytime I was, and I practiced this mission a lot because I knew it was my weakest one. I knew of all the other missions, courier droids was going to be the one where I was almost just saying, okay, when we get to the tournament, don't sweat it. You know, whatever happens on this one, you might have to kind of take the loss on that mission, right? Because it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. But I felt pretty good in the sense of at least having a plan, having some angle that I could go for on that mission rather than just kind of throwing my guys out and hoping for the best, you know?
Yeah. Scooping it out and just saying, all right, on to the next one.
Yep. But I always knew that one was going to be the hardest one for sure. So I'll keep moving here on these missions. The Usker Entertainment District Mission B is Lost and Found. And again, this is another stand on control points for 2 VP. Very similar strategy to how I described on Mos Eisley. Spread the guys out, get on those control points, and stay there, you know?
Let me ask you a question, Ryan. So I assume the strategy is you send your regular riots to hold points. Where are your elites, like, who is it that you're sending on, like, on the offense? Is it, like, all of your elites with a few regular riots? Is, like, that the general plan while the rest of your regular riots are, like, holding back? Is that the idea?
It's a good question. And the strategy that I found to be working... So when you're running a riot swarm, the biggest thing you don't want to happen is for your opponent to be able to remove both figures from one activation in the same round. And this is because, of course, you're running 2 copies of reinforcements in your command deck, which allows you to bring back a defeated figure as long as his partner or the other figure in that activation is still on the table. So you are trying to prevent your opponent from wiping out, you know, 2 elite riot troopers from the same activation. And the way that I was doing that is that I would constantly just completely split up all of my riot trooper activations. Mm-hmm. So I would separate those guys and send them off in different directions, which makes it very difficult for your opponent to remove one figure on one side of the map and then also try to get his partner on the other side of the map. You know what I mean?
Yep. Absolutely.
It slows down your offensive power because you're not putting
chaining, yeah, right? You know, like attack. Yeah.
Correct. The other thing that I came to realize about that is when you look at the elite riot troopers, right? And they dish out that weaken whenever they're attacking. To me, I don't really want both elite riot troopers attacking the same target because I wouldn't get to put the extra weaken out there.
Good point.
You know what I mean?
Great point.
So to me, it made sense. Split these guys up as much as possible. Have your riots attacking different targets. Make it more difficult for the opponent to remove the activations. And so honestly, yes, the elite riots are obviously the best attackers. I would usually activate those guys last in round one, so that they're not taking any early shots. But truly, I would attack with anyone who's in position. You know, the regular riot troopers, I would use those attacks when I could get them.
Yeah.
The elites are obviously better, but a lot of times it was just kind of playing that game of like putting some out, keeping them a little protected, and then a lot of like leapfrogging positioning, right?
Yeah.
So you'd put some guys out, make them targets. If the opponent attacks them once or twice, move some more riots out in front of them and block the line of sight, you know?
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of that kind of positioning was really the strategy there. But like I mentioned earlier, these control points, you put your regular riots a lot of times on the control points. If the opponent shoots at them, then, you know, you move that damaged guy back to the terminal or back to a backline control point where he is more protected, and keep him on the table. So those kinds of missions, like I said, feeling pretty good there. Moving on to Tarkin Initiative Labs. I'll start with mission B here, the abandoned research, which again is essentially a 2 victory point control point mission, right?
Yeah.
This is the one that provides you with the weapon dice, right?
Yep.
You get all these great extra weapons to add to your attack pool, but there are 4 control points on the map, and if you're standing next to them, you get 2 victory points. Again, it's a pretty good mission for my kind of list, staying on the control points. I have the actions to pick up those extra dice, to pick up those weapon tokens. And, you know, suddenly a regular riot trooper rolling a 3 dice attack, it's pretty scary, you know?
That is scary, especially when they're using all of their surges, right?
Exactly, right. If a regular riot trooper gets the red dice, yeah, you have to watch out for that because
oh man.
And so I really like that mission because, you know, the opponent either has to choose, okay, I'm going to sit back and stay in the deployment zone and take my long range shots, you know, at the riot swarm as they're coming in which case I get the control points, I get the weapons, or the opponent has to come out and meet me to contest the control points and try to get weapons of their own. And then at that point, my riot troopers are in striking range, you know?
They've like brought themselves to you.
Exactly. So either way, it's not going to go too bad for me there. So again, another mission where I felt like, okay, my list is doing pretty well here. And to get to the final one, Rogue AI. So this mission, you know, if you've played on it, you know how this mechanic works. There is a token that marks this AI that jumps around the map. Every time you move onto the space, you get 2 victory points, and then it moves to another random location. Like most people, you know, when this mission first came out, playing on a little bit with like elite jet troopers and found that these guys were, wow, the jet troopers can get around this map super well, can hit this victory point marker and really rack up some crazy points. Well, the Riot Swarm does it even better, you know?
Yeah, it does. Oh, man.
Split these guys up, and you can just cover the whole... This is a mission where, I mean, I jokingly kind of said this, but I'm not sure if I could lose this one. Because the Riot Swarm is just so good at being able to hit these points, and my sort of approach of splitting the figures up actually works even better here, because sometimes you hit the rogue AI on one side of the map with one figure, it might bounce to the other side. And if you've split your figures up and that other guy is in position, it is. So this was one where I felt like, okay, for as bad as the courier droid mission is for my list, this rogue AI makes up for it.
Absolutely.
In the sense of this one's going to go well for me. So that's the recap on the six missions there. And I think this is a good part of the preparation, right? Is like kind of going through there and having a plan on each one. What are you going to do? How's it going to work? What's your strategy?
Absolutely.
So yeah, at this point I could jump into my, recap of my run at Nationals, unless you have, you know, anything else you want to...
The only follow-up I would say is, so with command cards, obviously you're going to have double copies of reinforcements.
Yes.
Grenadier, I assume.
Yes.
Now, is there any other cards that I'm death blow? You don't have parting blow, I assume, because it's just tough to fit that in.
That's correct. But no, it's interesting that you bring it up, because I think when I sat down to play people at Nationals with this list, you know, a lot of times that's kind of one of the first things that a good player is going to do is sit there and try to figure out, okay, what is in this command card deck that I'm about to face, you know?
Yep. And what am I going to play against?
Right. And when you're playing against the typical, you know, archetype lists, you know, probably 80% of what those cards are, maybe more, you know?
Yep.
Because you've seen them. I noticed at Nationals, you know, a lot of players, very good players, before the game kind of sitting there, and we kind of talked about it a little bit, and they'd be scratching their heads trying to figure out what is in this command card deck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's just such a different list than most people are used to. It wasn't super flashy. Like you said, double reinforcements, of course, cards like Death Blow to get that extra damage in there. Very important. Extra movement like urgency and face to face and looking for a fight. Grenadier, of course, is great.
It's an amazing card.
A 2-point riot trooper throwing that grenade is always going to be good. I did include strength in numbers.
You did include that?
Yes, because
I like that.
You could combo an elite riot activation to a regular riot activation. And that, if you've got four riot troopers that get to make those attacks before your opponent can respond, that can usually be pretty powerful.
That concludes episode 74 of Zion's Finest. We are going to, I encourage you to immediately turn to the next episode, episode 75, where Ryan is going to round out his command card discussion and then talk about how he did at Nationals, which, spoiler alert, he did really, really well. Thank you for listening.